to the Fort Brock Crypto Podcast. I am your host, Neil Alonzo, with my co-host, co-founder of Fort Brock, Mr. Brandon Donheath.
What's up?
What's up, man? It's good to see you.
You too.
Yeah. For those of you listening, Brandon's been gone for a little while.
Yeah, just a month.
Just a month on The Bachelor?
Yeah.
No, he wasn't a bachelor.
I wasn't a contestant.
No, you weren't, but no. You could have been. I mean, you would have been the dopest bachelor, I think, ever.
No.
But you know why we're here today?
Yeah. What's Ethereum.
It? Yeah, tell our listeners.
Oh, today we'll be talking about Ethereum, going a deep dive into the coin, the pros, the cons.
You can't hear it or see it maybe unless you're watching us on YouTube, but Brandon, when he says cons, there's an undertone there.
Yeah.
Because I think there's a lot of cons.
No, I mean, it's not a lot of cons, but a couple glaring ones.
Glaring.
So, yeah.
But before we dive in too much further, we have to provide some disclosures.
Disclosure time, baby.
Let me disclose. Okay, so we are not financial advisors, wealth managers, lawyers, CPAs, or brokers. The information we're providing is sharing our own experience, our own points of view, but by no means do not construe this as investment advice whatsoever.
Yeah.
So now we're good. That was the disclosure. Oh, I guess more in the transparent side, we also are a mining company, Fort Brock. We do mine Ethereum.
Yep.
Currently, we're mining Ethereum and converting it to Nano.
Yeah, with two miners.
With two miners. We're looking into converting into Bitcoin. You know, lots of different options these days.
Or keeping it Ethereum.
Yeah, so we do like the financial benefits of Ethereum from a mining standpoint.
Yeah.
So now that we've been super transparent, we've told people that, you know, we're not experts to tell them how to spend their money.
No. I mean, I would like at some point to get the 35 necessary to start a node.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then we can, well, we're going to get to that as we talk through it. So let's open up Ethereum because there's so much to unpack. And I guess we should probably date this a little bit too, because this is April 30th of 2022.
Yeah.
Ethereum is moving fast with updates of information.
Yeah. I mean, we've recorded this podcast two times, the Ethereum one.
Yeah.
Already.
Because we had other episodes that we released, and now it's things we're going to talk about are going to date themselves at a certain point.
Yeah.
But we're also trying to bring people up to speed who maybe don't know as much about Ethereum and its origin.
Absolutely.
So to kick that off, you know, let's dive into this.
Vitalik Buterin, huh?
Vitalik Buterin.
Who's that guy?
He's the gentleman who created Ethereum. So do you know much about Vitalik?
Just from our previous, and then his name's always on certain things. Like, he was gifted, I think, a billion SHIB and then donated it to, where was that? India, which was interesting.
Oh, well, let me read some of his bio here. Who created Ethereum? Vitalik Buterin. He's a 20-year-old Russian Canadian at the time, you know? And so he was inspired to create Ethereum after realizing it might be possible to apply Bitcoin's design more broadly to mitigate the, quote, horrors of centralized web services.
Yeah.
In a famous example, Buterin cited slights suffered played the popular online game World of Warcraft.
Yeah.
As developers at the time, you know, could make arbitrary changes despite the wishes of users. Buterin would later receive a Thiel Fellowship, Peter Thiel.
Mm-hmm.
To pursue Ethereum full-time and set to work creating a nonprofit to help launch the project. In early 2014, the Ethereum Foundation sold 72 million ETH, Ether, in an online crowd sale, which generated roughly 18 million in a funding for the effort. So 18 million to fund it, you know, after being backed by Peter Thiel.
Yeah, this is before
fellowship.
Before ICOs and stuff,
2014, early 2014.
Yeah, definitely.
So Ethereum would go on to attract passionate community of users and, you know, all that wonderful stuff. So other notable figures include Gavin Wood, author of the Ethereum Yellow Paper specifying its virtual machine, Jeff Wilkie, creator of the first Ethereum software implementation, Joseph Lubin, founder of Consensus, a major Ethereum investment incubator, Vlad Zamirfir, my apologies, I'm saying it wrong, cryptographer focused on protocol development and game theory. So that's kind of it from that initial, like, hey, this is the brass tacks of it.
Yeah.
But Ethereum is a layer one.
Yeah.
Right?
For sure.
And for those who don't know what layer one is a blockchain.
Yeah.
So Bitcoin is a layer one.
Layer one.
Solana is a layer one.
Layer one.
So a layer two.
Would Ravencoin be considered layer one?
Some people believe it to be. Some people argue that it's layer two because it's built on top of Bitcoin's blockchain. But
It's its own blockchain at the same time.
But it is, yeah. So there was actually tweets about it this morning some of the Raven community talking about it being a layer one.
Yeah.
So in that way, you know, so a layer two would be something that was built on top of Ethereum, right?
Or something that was built on top of BNB or something.
Yeah. You know, so that would be a layer two. A layer three are the exchanges.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And then if you want to go layer four, you know, you have custodians. And there was a great podcast actually with Lex Friedman and Michael Saylor that talked a little bit about this, but that was 3 hours and 55 minutes.
Of talking about it?
Of just talking about
Bitcoin. You listened to the whole thing?
In sections, but it was dope. I mean, I don't know if you've listened to Michael Saylor, but
no, I haven't.
You know, he's got some experience and interesting purview, and he's put a lot of money into Bitcoin. But this is about Ethereum. This episode's about Ethereum.
Yeah. You're saying Vitalik Buterin, he was on the Bitcoin Council.
Bitcoin Magazine.
Okay. Yeah,
in 2011, according to this.
Yeah.
You know, the information that we found. But in diving, let me see here. So he was a programmer and co-founder of Bitcoin Magazine that described a way to build decentralized applications.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Bitcoin, obviously, there's been a lot of chatter about being on the Lightning Network. That has nothing to do with Ethereum. Ethereum was basically, and this is what's been written and said about its creation, it was the evolution of Bitcoin, saying that the Bitcoin blockchain, there was improvements that could be made.
Yeah.
Given the fact that it is 2022 in April, we can say that we have a little more hindsight than when it was created.
Yeah.
I'm of the opinion that Vitalik did not foresee the adoption that it was going to have.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've seen a lot of criticism of Ethereum. I've seen criticism of him in that way. But when you're inventing the future, how do you know what the future is going to happen? You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Like, obviously, gas fees are shit.
Yeah.
It's bloated.
Yeah.
That's one of your biggest problems with
it. Biggest problems with it is it is a bloated network. But, yeah, you can't really plan for adoption.
No.
You know?
Who knew this many people were going to basically live, die, and breathe Ethereum? Because OpenSea would have never existed without Ethereum.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? And so with that many different companies, people building on top of your platform, it's not like you could load or, you know, balance test that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
for sure. I mean, at the heart of it, like it says here on the Wikipedia that Buterin argued that Bitcoin core developers, that Bitcoin and blockchain technology could benefit from all the other applications besides money that needed a more robust language for application development. And they did that. And being open source led it to a larger number of adoptees. And then NFTs, smart contracts. And like NFTs are basically just the budding version of what like smart contracts are going to become. Like, and what they are. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like, it's that in its infancy. And so we're just kind of putting a stress test on what smart contracts can do by like these NFTs, which is interesting. I mean, I'm fully on board with it, but the gas fees do suck. So.
Well, I mean, we've heard horror stories of the gas fees. Oh, you know, somebody might want to
live through them.
Buy an NFT. Let's say you want to buy it for $20, but your gas fee's $200. You're like, huh? Yep. What?
Yeah.
How did that just happen?
Yep.
You know, and so I know we're jumping ahead a little bit, but is 2.0 really going to solve that problem? Ethereum 2.0.
I don't think so, but yeah, I don't think so.
You
I
don't mean, think, what makes you say that though?
I don't think it's like the end all be all for the like possibilities for it. Mm-hmm. I think it was basically built with an incentive structure built into it. So your developers of stuff, I mean, that's kind of what a smart contract is anyway, is just like who gets paid down the line from the sales of these NFTs. So it's like also with the development and like anytime you sell one, like the fee structure is put in place. So what gas fees are is you're basically bidding on miners to speed up your transaction to be like, hey, can you make sure that this is processed, that this is agreeable, you know, on both ends with the blockchain, so that it basically ties it to it, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, what you're talking about also has a lot to do with Ethereum currently is proof of work.
Yeah.
Ethereum 2.0 is going to be proof of stake.
Yeah.
Those are drastically different things.
But it doesn't just take out that fee structure that's already been put into place. Like, you can't just like wipe it out completely. Somebody's going to get paid down the line somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, I get it. I get what you're saying.
Yeah. And like, nobody's going to stake 2.0 if it's not making them money. You know what I mean?
Only true believers.
That's true.
You know, there's diehards out there.
I mean, we're going to try, so.
Well, I'm already staking.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
You know, some of my Ethereum for 2.0.
Yeah, but that, I mean, it's not really staking yet, but okay.
What makes you say that?
Well, because it's not offered. So it's basically, it's just one of the, it's like a pre-offering of staking.
So you're talking about the staking Binance, like on Coinbase.
Coinbase, yeah. So they're just kind of...
It's not like we've created our own node.
Yeah, I don't think so.
For 2.0. No, yeah. I get what you're saying.
Because it's not proof of stake yet. So what I think it is they're using that as like a money pot and staking other coins that actually do stake and then giving you rewards from that. I'm not positive that's what they're doing, but since it's not...
We'll put it in the show notes. We're going to put links in the show notes.
Since it's not actually staking
yet.
Enabled, I think that's what they're doing.
But, yeah, we'll put that in the show notes. So that's a good follow-up.
Yeah.
But to kind of hit a little bit of rewind on Ethereum.
Rewind, yeah.
Ethereum, you know, it describes itself as the foundation for our digital future. You know,
it's... Yeah.
Yeah, it's banking for everyone. It's supposed to be a more private internet. It is a peer-to-peer network.
Yeah.
You know, it's censorship-resistant, commerce guarantees, and it talks about compatibility because other companies can build on top of it. So it really... Ethereum's the first one out of this bunch to open the market for Layer 2.
Yeah.
I mean, it has become the poster child of what can be done on top of somebody else's blockchain.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Bitcoin has, you know, applications... You know, we're fans of Ravencoin. It's a fork on the Bitcoin blockchain. But they are different, completely different. And the vulnerabilities that Ethereum has are not necessarily the same ones that Bitcoin has.
Correct.
You know, Bitcoin has had less issues than Ethereum.
Yeah.
It just has. Has it not?
Yeah. I mean, there was that, like, weird hack that somebody did. I'm not positive on it.
We can put it in the show notes. There
was
which one?
It was a strange hack that happened where it wasn't as like where somebody could backdoor say like, hey, blah, blah, blah. But they fixed it with a patch.
When you say they fixed it, who's they?
The Bitcoin Council, whoever like spends their time doing that. Just making sure, because it's all open source. Like, they don't get paid to be on this council, but they have a team of developers that, like lend their time to it, which is kind of cool, you know?
Well, I'm going to put that link in the show notes as well.
Yeah.
So with Ethereum, though, they have decentralized finance. I mean, they've really pioneered DeFi, right? Which is a more open financial system that gives you more control over your money and unlocks new possibilities, according to what it's written on Ethereum.org. They also offer non-fungible tokens, NFTs. They've obviously exploded that market.
Yeah.
And DAOs, decentralized autonomous organizations.
Yeah.
I mean, we've talked about...
Which are cool in theory.
It's interesting the way you just put that. It is cool in theory. Yeah. There hasn't been enough execution of them done in a way that's become substantial enough yet.
Yeah.
And there's probably things being released today or even yesterday that are going to make their way up to the forefront. And we'll be like, oh, they're doing it right.
Yeah. Well, like I said, with the, like, NFTs are basically just testing the waters of smart contracts. Well, DAOs are taking that and expanding it further. You know what I mean?
Well, it's allowing governance over those NFTs. Because if the NFT is your asset, you know, you need something to manage and own that asset.
Yeah.
So instead of having a corporation centralized making all the decisions with the CEO, you now have, you know, a mechanism there or a set of rules that allow that organization to exist to govern those assets, which would be NFTs.
Yep.
One of the things Michael Saylor said.
Doesn't have to be NFTs, though.
No. You can use a DAO for something else.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be that they're just the asset of an NFT.
Because you saw that on the news, the that one DAO was trying to raise enough money to buy the Denver Broncos, which would be kind of cool. It'd be like, oh. But, I mean, you keep seeing these problems with certain DAOs. Like, there's that one that got taken for basically $50 million or something.
Which one is that?
I don't know the actual name of it.
Let's take a look.
But this one guy was trying to buy a majority stake or get on, be the president or something of that. Or, like, be a... like voting member, everybody voted him down. So he went through the back door, bought a whole bunch more, and then made himself. So because their smart contract wasn't fully flushed out, he hacked it in a way that gave him control. And then he basically printed out a lot more tokens that they used for, you know, asset tokenization, and then sold them all.
Was it the fund that was called DAO?
Maybe.
I mean, I'm seeing this. It says $50 million of virtual currency is what he made off with.
Yeah.
And this was in June of
last year,
2016. A $50 million hack just showed that the DAO was all too human.
No.
This was a different one.
Yeah, this one was last year.
Okay.
Badger DAO, $120 million. Badger DAO.
Badger DAO reveals details of how it was hacked for $120 million.
Yeah.
The DeFi platform said an application platform that runs on its cloud network was the vector for the attack.
Mm-hmm.
So Badger DAO said a phishing incident that occurred on December 2nd, this is 2021, was caused by a malicious inject snippet from Cloudflare, an application platform that runs on Badger's cloud network. The hacker used a compromised API key that was created without the knowledge or authorization of Badger engineers. This is interesting. We'll see. So
what I'm saying is that it's like, it's still in its infancy. So,
we've kind of touched on the founder, the origin of Ethereum, the history. So we're really starting to dive into what it is. And that's really what's relevant for this podcast.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Because DAOs, in my opinion, the biggest problem with it is that there's humans involved.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, for sure.
That's the reason why the DAO could solve a lot of issues. It's supposed to remove the human equation on a number of levels.
Yeah.
Because we are humans and there's a lot of shit that goes sideways when we're involved.
Yeah.
I mean, look at Elon Musk and Twitter.
Yeah.
There's so much cannon fodder. I mean, the things dominating water cooler talk right now is Elon Musk and Amber Heard and Johnny Depp.
Yeah.
You know, if this was a time capsule podcast, that's what's going on in the world right now. Ukraine, what? Yep. You know what I mean? Other shit that's happening. Inflation gets talked about a lot, but if you Google Amber Heard and Johnny Depp.
Yeah. Whose side are
you on? And Elon Musk.
I'm just kidding.
Mine? Oh, man.
Don't say.
It's crazy. You know how, and you know this, reality TV is just TV. I mean, you can't call it reality TV anymore because it just seems to be everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, Amber Heard and Johnny Depp, that's YouTube, baby. I don't know. But all things entertainment-wise, Ethereum's empowered that as well.
Yeah.
Because if you think about the way everybody's perceiving Web3.
Yeah.
Ethereum's been leading the charge of that.
Yeah.
Bitcoin has had a lot of, you know, financial people involved, economists involved. You have environmental. I mean, there's a lot of people when you think about old world money, old guard.
Yeah.
That talk a lot about Bitcoin. And you have your Bitcoin maximalists, right?
Yeah.
And you have, you know, Bitcoin conferences. But Ethereum has done something that Bitcoin hasn't, and that was attracted creative minds, people with little to no money.
Yeah.
You know, and when you think about developers sleeping on just a mattress in an empty apartment, Ethereum was able to, you know, really capture the attention of that.
Yeah.
More so than Bitcoin, I believe, because you could build on top of Ethereum.
Yeah. Well, you can build on top of
Bitcoin as well.
Bitcoin, but it's just apparently a harder language.
It's harder, but it's also, in my opinion, because of the Lightning Network and a lot of the functionality that it established, it might be a little more secure.
Yeah.
It might even be faster in some ways.
Yeah.
My thought process is this, is that Bitcoin, you know, Satoshi, everything about it was introduced. And Ethereum, you know, aside from the World of Warcraft muse that Vitalik had, Bitcoin was already out.
Yeah.
So there's been, you know, posts about Ethereum being the evolution of Bitcoin's blockchain.
Yeah.
But I'm of the opinion that it's still too early for Ethereum to evolve Bitcoin, because Bitcoin wasn't around long enough for it to, for people to really understand the pros and cons of it, some of its pain points. So it'd almost be like somebody saying, hey, you know, I invented the car, you know, and then, okay, what's the car do? Maybe 20 miles an hour. You know, it's not super fast. It's, you know, Henry Ford days maybe or something. Wow. But then you have Elon Musk come out 2 years later. And I'm not comparing Elon to Vitalik Buterin, but it would be like a Tesla coming out a few years after the first car was invented.
Yeah.
That's what they're almost positioning Ethereum as with Bitcoin.
Lamborghini used to be a tractor maker. He asked Enzo Ferrari to build him a car, and then he did, and he was like, I could build a better one.
Oh, that's,
and that's how Lamborghini was created.
But do you see the point I'm trying to make? Is that the evolution of Ethereum, Bitcoin hasn't been around long enough to where we needed a different blockchain, in my opinion.
Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah.
So having said that,
now we've got thousands of them. So
yeah, and yeah, right.
Yeah.
So here's the thing, and this has been because we do the weekly recap of news.
Yeah.
A lot of chatter has been happening that because VCs are involved, money's involved. Period.
Yeah.
That people are deploying new blockchains without really doing a weighs and checks of should we release it yet?
Yeah.
Because we can. You know what I mean? Like, everything's not rock solid.
No.
Now, mind you, everything in Silicon Valley is, you know, move fast, break things.
Move fast, break things, yeah.
But here's the shit of that, right?
Yeah.
If you move fast and break things on a blockchain that's supposed to be super secure, you know, everything immutable. About Web3, immutable, right?
Yeah.
You're fucking us, man.
Yeah.
You know, simply because you want to put out something. Now, done is better than perfect is another cliche phrase.
Yep.
But if you're building something that people are building on top of and your shit isn't solid and it's not tight,
yeah,
should you be putting it out yet?
Maybe.
Ethereum had to come out when it did, because that's just the evolution of it. And it doesn't matter. It's already out.
Yeah.
But the choices that they're making today, what are they influenced by?
Yeah.
You know, is it by community? Is it by the market?
Yeah.
Is it by certain money? You know, because proof of stake, moving away from proof of work, and again, you know, I'll be transparent as hell about this. We are a little biased because we are into mining.
Yeah.
But I would much rather it stay proof of work than proof of stake. There's chatter that it's based around the environmental side.
Yeah.
You know, and Vitalik Buterin did put out a tweet, which we'll put in the show notes. It was really cool. I mean, it was a real transparent way of him kind of acknowledging the benefits of both proof of work and proof of stake, and the cons of both proof of work and proof of stake, right? Again, you can't look at a crystal ball in this way.
No.
And for people that are saying that they're experts now in this space, it just baffles me.
Yeah.
Because how can you be an expert when the people that are building this shit don't even claim themselves to be experts?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
For sure.
I hear other people doing conferences, keynote speeches, where it sounds like, you know, they're the voice right next to God.
Yeah.
But Vitalik Buterin doesn't come across that same way to me.
How come they don't do a hybrid model then? I mean,
what do you mean?
They're going to try, I guess, when they start moving over. But why don't they try a hybrid model, proof of stake and proof of work?
Man. I don't know. Do you got a cell number?
Yeah, I think so.
The other gentleman that I see tweets on, and I think I'm, you know, fucking up his name. It's Tim Biko. Mm-hmm. But he was talking about the reporting on the merge as it's happening.
Yeah.
And, you know, what's going on with that? The merge is delayed again.
Yeah.
You know, and they're doing a shadow fork right now to try to see, you know, they're trying to test it to make sure it can be
released. They did do a test, right? You posted about that.
Yeah, they did do a test, but there were some failures in it.
It was
predominantly successful, but there's still some holes in it, right?
Yeah.
So this goes back to the question, is done better than perfect on a new blockchain? Especially your second chance at it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's 2.0. I mean, how many other chances are they going to have? You have proof of work, proof of stake. you going to move to proof of access? Are you going to move to proof of blank? You know, yeah. Is proof of blank going to turn into the next Uber of blank? If you know what I'm saying when I say that?
Yeah.
Like startups used to pitch companies like, hey, we're Uber of the food delivery.
Yeah.
Or we're Uber of air travel.
Yeah.
Or people just start pitching shit going, we're proof of blank.
We're Uber of shoes. You know what I mean?
Oh, don't get me started on that. Nike just, they had that sneaker, Artifact. My bad. Dude, I sound so lame when I say that. Sold 130,000 NFT. Virtual Nike.
Just one?
Yeah.
One and one?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Sick, huh?
That's pretty good. Did you get it? Was it officially sponsored by, or is he going to get some cease and desist?
No. This was a Nike virtual shoe release.
Because there's somebody that was doing like virtual Nikes. I think they were Nike inspired or whatever. But they got a cease and desist. But it's already up there and out there. And like, what do you do with that?
Right. I mean, you have knockoffs.
Yeah.
I mean, you have knockoffs in the real world.
That's true.
In all the news that's been happening, you have metaverse marriages, right?
Wow.
Yeah.
You're saying I can get married in the metaverse to somebody beside my wife?
Which is going to be interesting, right? Because going to Ethereum, right? Think about that for a second.
Yeah.
Are you going to have an ENS for your new married name? And then are you also going to split the assets that you acquire in the metaverse versus the real world? Because you could have a metaverse marriage. Versus a real world merge, IRL, you know, say IRL for the hell of it in real life. You know what I mean? So the division of those assets will be quite interesting, right?
Whoa.
Yeah. And then the other one that just popped up on the news feed that we reported on was religion in the metaverse.
Religion?
They said there's over 6 billion market cap of people involved. Doesn't say market cap of money that can be made.
Yeah.
Because I don't believe they know how much that could be made with religion in the metaverse. And again, we're not political or religious, but damn, from a business standpoint, there is so much money to be made.
What is going on?
Yeah, well, why? You know that the metaverse is just going to be another manifestation of IRL. It's just we're going to be everything that we wish we were in real life. So instead of having to get abs in the real world, you can get them in the metaverse for a lot less because you can power up.
Yeah.
Because that's they say abs are made in the kitchen, right?
Yeah.
And which sucks because I could do 1,000 sit-ups every day, but still, because I love baked goods, they're never going to size up.
Pizza, man. Ooh.
Salmon's Pizzanista. If you're ever in L.A.,
Pizzanista. Should we go get some pizza after this?
You know I'm down. But getting back to all things Ethereum. Yeah. I mean,
we were on 2.0, yeah?
We were on 2.0. And let's talk about the community of Ethereum.
Yeah.
Ethereum has a massive community.
Massive.
A substantial amount of... I mean, it's almost like Howard Stern was in the early days.
Yeah.
In the sense that, and I remember seeing this in Private Parts, the book and, you know, the movie, but the average Stern listener listened for an exceptional amount of time.
Yeah.
Whereas the people who hated Howard Stern listened for more than the people who liked him, simply because, and I guess the response was they wanted to see what he'd say next.
Yeah.
Right. Well, with Ethereum, even the people that don't really like it still engage with it on a high level.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're using OpenSea, you're on Ethereum. OpenSea just released, you know, the beta with Solana, but it's all Ethereum right now. You know, they're going to start having to use other tokenization.
Like Matic blockchain.
Oh, well, I'm a fan of Cosmos.
Yeah.
Which is Matic. I'm a huge fan of that platform. And it was the Binance Smart Chain was built on top of that.
Oh, it was built on top of Cosmos.
Yep.
So Binance Smart Chain is a layer two?
I believe so. We need it. I'm going to put this in show notes.
Interesting.
But
because a lot of stuff has been built off of
Cosmos.
BNB.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting.
We're going to put it in the show notes, but if you look it up in Cosmos and Binance's Smart Chain, it's in one of their blog posts. We have it in one of something that we had pushed out as a reference point in one of our other podcasts.
Yeah.
But the community of Ethereum has just, it's expanded and blown up in such a way because now you have celebrities involved because of NFTs. NFTs have really drove adoption behind Ethereum. And even though gas fees are a shit show, people are still doing transactions with it every day.
Yeah.
We're in a hugely down market. And look at Moonbirds right now.
Yeah.
Just
Moonbirds.
Massive. I mean, Bored Ape Yacht Club is living on all things Ethereum right now.
Yeah.
I mean, that thing has created such a juggernaut.
Yeah.
You know? And
ApeCoin and everything that's come out about that, you know, or come with that. Like, I mean, it started out just being able to go to a private event.
Right.
And then now they've got a burger shop in West Hollywood.
Which we need to try.
Is it just a pop-up or is it going to be there?
I think it's a pop-up.
Okay, cool.
I believe it is. I mean, but if they're returning revenue and
yeah.
I'm sure they... Maybe just pop up more places or eventually have a full-on... You know what I mean?
Imagine just having, like, fuck you money like that, you know?
Actually, I can't imagine. You know how a lot of people say, hey, can you imagine this? I'm like, yes, I can imagine that.
But, I'm imagining it right now, you know?
Yeah, I mean, just so you know, you'd still be as good looking as you are.
Oh, thanks,
you're a beautiful man.
I'd probably just be shaved up, I guess, yeah?
Wait, you need ridiculous fuck you money to shave?
Yeah. I need a reason to shave.
I need a reason to shave. But getting back to Ethereum, right? Yep. So everything with Ethereum, it promises all these things, especially security, the future of Web3. But the biggest issue, again, is humans. Humans are involved. So when they're saying that, oh, this Ethereum, you know, layer 2, whatever it may be, was hacked, it's like, well, what was the human quotient versus the blockchain's fault?
Yeah.
The Ethereum blockchain. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that gets, I think that's a misconception.
Because they get tied together.
Yeah, they point the finger at the actual Ethereum blockchain as opposed to whoever it was that built on top of that.
Yeah.
Because it does not matter what blockchain it is. If I give you my private key, like you're getting my shit.
Yeah.
Nothing... All the security in the world ain't going to fix that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but I think it unfairly gets lumped into that.
Yeah, for sure.
It's just something that, you know, people for some reason, I wish they would move away from. But then again, if you're a news media outlet and you're talking about crypto and Web3, are you really going to report on all things happy, feel good vibes? I mean, we're not John Krasinski doing the, what was it, that good news show?
That the good during news the during the pandemic. That was cool.
Supposedly it got picked up for something, but I haven't seen it yet.
Really?
To go on one of the networks or streamers.
But. Yeah. I mean, it's like, I could see, like, it's the difference between, like, CNN versus Fox News. I guess they're both just yelling at you.
Yeah, but at least you know which side they're yelling from.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
There's not as much clarity. But it's just
it's always bad news. You're like, okay, cool. I guess I should be upset about this thing now. Okay.
So let me ask you, what is the difference between Ethereum Classic and Ethereum?
Ethereum Classic was the original Ethereum, right? And then they forked off. They did a hard fork. And then Ethereum as it is now, so that I think that they could write more code from it. I'm not super positive, but I do know that it was a fork.
So the main difference between Ethereum Classic, ETC, and Ethereum, ETH, is that ETC is a speculative digital asset with a fixed supply, whereas ETH is more popular and accepted version that is widely traded and no fixed supply. Both are a result of a hard fork that occurred when Ethereum Classic was hacked in 2016.
Got it. So Ethereum Classic was hacked, and so they
created a hard Ethereum fork. So this isn't the first time that Ethereum has had to make up for not having the crystal ball.
Yeah.
So Ethereum 2.0, it would be ignorant of me to say it's just another Ethereum Classic. It's not. I don't believe that... It's fair to say that it's the exact same thing that happened with Ethereum Classic has made a move to 2.0.
Yeah.
I do believe that there's more rationale to why it's moving to 2.0. There's been a lot published about it. Again, it's going to be in our show notes with Vitalik Buterin's talk about proof of work versus proof of stake. And we will put in the show notes links to op-ed pieces plus people from the Ethereum community that talk about why they're moving to 2.0. But it does show This is a common occurrence because, again, these blockchains are built by people. Just because people don't know who Satoshi is, it's almost like they don't have a place to point the finger. You know what I mean? They're going to point it to the ground or they're going to point it to the sky.
Yeah.
They are not out there. These are not inclusive pronouns. It's just that nobody knows for sure who Satoshi is.
Yeah.
That type of anonymity has helped in so many ways.
Yeah, for sure.
Ethereum doesn't have that. Michael Saylor, and I know I keep referencing that podcast, but it's a really, you know, thought-provoking podcast. And I'm sure there's other people that have a contradictory opinion of Michael Saylor. But one of the things that he had mentioned is that there is somebody leading the charge on Ethereum.
Yeah.
As opposed to Bitcoin. Bitcoin should be treated like property. Ethereum should be treated as like stock. And it's because there is a little bit of centralization there that Bitcoin does not have.
So you have a face behind the name.
It does.
Yeah.
It changes things.
I can see that.
Well, because there's another misconception that we've seen with Ethereum is that just because it can be a decentralized platform to build upon doesn't mean everything that's going to be built on top of it, layer twos, are going to be decentralized.
Yeah.
There's so many things centralized that are being built on top of Ethereum.
Yeah.
But again, it gets lumped into this kind of halo discussion about, well, we thought it was supposed to be secure. You know what I mean? Like all the benefits of being decentralized properly, right? Yeah. And you kind of brought it up with how DAOs they're not executed properly yet.
They
haven't realized their full potential yet.
It's in its infancy,
right?
Like they're just a couple years old. I mean, I know that Ethereum is a DAO in itself.
Yes,
like the council or whatever.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Yeah. But so that was like the first one, and then you've got all these afterwards that are popping up, which are, I mean, I think it's really cool, and it's, you have to have innovators in the space in order to move it forward. But like I said, it's in its infancy, I think.
No, I fully agree. Yeah. Everything's in its infancy.
Maybe it's in its toddlership. I don't know.
Maybe it's just
in the
womb.
Couple years old. Yeah.
No, because it has to be born so people can play with it.
Yeah.
That's a weird way of putting it. Yeah. I realize that. I have three kids, so I feel like.
Just to go back to what you were saying about the like shadowness, there's a Satoshi's final message that he sent was in response to early Bitcoin developer Gavin Anderson or Andreessen.
Andreessen.
No, it's Anderson. Gavin Anderson. It's not Andreessen. But he said, "I wish you would stop talking about me as a mysterious, shadowy figure. The press just turns that into a pirate currency angle. Maybe instead make it about the open source project and give more credit to contributors. It helps motivate them." That was his final message.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I.
When you say his, that's speculative.
Oh,
right?
That's true. Yeah.
Okay. No. I'm
they.
They.
There.
Them.
There.
Herm.
Yeah. I'm bad with pronouns. I should get better at it.
The peoples is peoples, man. That's why I keep using the reference of humans. Humans are involved.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Okay. So to dive into some more just kind of blanketed information about Ethereum. Ethereum is probably widely accepted on the most amount of exchanges outside of Bitcoin.
Yeah.
It's wallets. I mean.
Yeah.
How many different wallets are there?
How many wallets?
Yeah.
Tons.
There's so many wallets that it's accepted on.
There's more coming out.
Yeah,
you know,
every day, or it feels like every day.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's cool, but like, yeah. Well, I like to think of it as there's like in our capitalist society, there's a lot of options to choose from. There's a lot of what do you call that? Competition.
Very much so. Everybody's racing to be.
Yeah.
Number one or number two, Disneyland or Knott's Berry Farm.
The crypto.com arenas of this.
I mean, they're definitely buying their space.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think we've mentioned it before. I'm of the belief they're Samsunging in the market.
Yeah.
You know, Apple doesn't have to go to CES and everybody talks about them. Samsung just buys everything around it so people talk about them.
Yeah.
It isn't to necessarily say that the stuff they put out is shit. It's just they have to pay more for their branding recognition than Apple does. You know, some exchanges can do the same amount and still get a lot of traction.
Yeah.
But crypto.com knows. I mean, It's all about adoption.
Yeah.
I will say one of the things about all the exchanges, those, their apps, they need to simplify use of them.
Yeah.
Some of them are quite confusing. And for people who just want to get in, involved, and feel like they're part of it, they need a more simplified interface.
Well, that's a Coinbase. But even Coinbase difficult for some people. Yeah.
Yeah. And these are smart people. Like, even our card partners.
For sure.
A lot. I mean, these are smart people.
Yeah.
You know, well-to-do people in a lot of cases. Because if you have money to spend on in mining, I mean, chances are you're doing something well in your career path. But, again, if you're... It's like stocks.
Yeah.
You know, you are going to lose money if you don't pay attention.
Yeah.
But in this particular space, you have to invest a little bit of time onboarding to understand how to navigate them.
Yeah.
I wish there was, you know, almost a standard interface, because almost a lot of these apps, you'll open them up and it's like, what am I getting into?
Yeah.
You know, it's there's no standard operations protocol.
No, but I mean, since I started out with Coinbase and then went to Binance, because Binance at the time offered this huge amount of
Binance.us.
No.
Oh, Binance. You were on Binance beforehand. Okay. Yeah.
And then when they switched over to Binance US because of the KYC laws, know your customer laws that started coming out.
That's
so
right.
They changed over to Binance US and were like, hey, you have to put all your coins on Binance US. And I was like, what? Why? And then, like, some of my coins weren't on there, so I had to change them over to other coins and then ship them over.
Yeah.
So that I wouldn't lose custody of them, basically.
Yeah. And
I'm like, oh, are these going to go through? Like, I don't know, you know? But it was, yeah. So it was pretty wild, Wild West. But because I learned on that platform, Binance, the old one.
Yeah.
All these other ones are just the same thing, basically.
Except for KuCoin.
KuCoin, I think it was built off of Binance.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's why KuCoin is definitely
one of the more, I guess, say, I don't know, advanced, feature heavy.
Yeah. I don't think you're allowed to use it in the U.S., but they just go, okay.
I know. We have a walkthrough on our YouTube page about how to download your CSV file spreadsheets of pulling any of your transaction data so you can file your taxes.
Yeah.
When you go to KuCoin's support website, it even cites the fact that they don't offer it necessarily anything directly associated, but all of the, like, CoinTracker, Coinly.
You can't get verified with a U.S. residence.
Oh, on KuCoin.
On KuCoin.
Got it.
So I know one of my neighbors, he lost $6,000 worth of XRP switching over there and put in the wrong tag number.
Oh, damn.
Put in the right address, but the wrong tag number. And so they were like, hey, we went through this whole process of, like, you know, send 20 from that over to this with the right tag number, send us $100 in
But it seems like they've been more responsive. Like, I'll see Reddit threads from KuCoin support.
Super responsive. But the problem is they were like, well, you have to verify in order to get your money.
Damn.
Or get your coins back. And he was like, how do I get verified? And I was like, bro, move to Portugal. I don't know. Like, I seriously have no idea how you're going to get this money back. So that's $6,000 in XRP.
Yeah. That sucks, man.
Yeah.
Especially since XRP, I mean, it seems like they might win their case. Ripple might win their case.
Yeah.
With the SEC.
But I mean, they're already like number 5 on CoinMarketCap or something.
Yeah. So they're doing well.
I don't think it's going to go up much past that.
Oh, you don't?
No.
Okay. Unless the whole market has a lift.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly.
I got you. Well, jumping back to Ethereum wallets.
Yeah.
I love what Ethereum.org says. It says, showing 40 Ethereum wallets below. Overwhelmed? Try filtering by features. And the features could be buy crypto with a card, like a debit credit card. Exploring dApps, decentralized applications.
Yeah.
Access to DeFi.
Yeah.
Withdrawal to bank. Limiting protection. High volume purchases. Decentralized token swaps. Or multi-signature accounts. So it really shows the breadth of what Ethereum is already offering as far as a value proposition, how people are building on top of it.
Yeah.
Because you have so many wallets, you have to filter by
what you want,
the key features you want. I mean, I know I have a lot of wallets.
Yeah.
You know.
Me too.
Right now, I'm using MetaMask to sign into Mirror.xyz, which is that writing platform that we discovered when Katie Hahn launched Hahn Ventures. And you can mint articles or any creative work that you post up on there. So it's really interesting. But you purchase your ENS to tie it to your Mirror.xyz profile.
Got it.
It's basically supposed to be like Medium, that blog platform, except you own your stuff.
Instead of
Ev Williams.
Yeah.
He was the one of the Twitter founders created Medium.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. But I mean,
is he going to sell that to?
I don't know. Elon? I don't know.
What's Elon going to buy next?
Right. Well, he's going to buy all kinds of shit.
Yeah.
I don't know. I love that there's these types of figureheads. There was an article in, oh my goodness, for some reason the site has escaped me, but Jessica Leston, I think her name is, The Information, I believe it is. She talks about CEOs becoming a creator. So Elon Musk, I mean, he's not the first one. Warren Buffett, Rupert Murdoch, I mean, they all have their own celebrity creator cachet of content that
Bernie Madoff, yeah.
Shit. Damn. Well, I mean, they had that movie with Michelle Pfeiffer and Robert De Niro played Bernie Madoff HBO called Wizard of Lies.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't think we want to go that route. I mean, people are already leery enough of crypto and crypto mining, think it's a Ponzi scheme.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so yeah. But to that point, though, you have these CEOs that have these platforms now to where they're talking in a way that they are a different form of celebrity.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, even the former T-Mobile, Dan, I forget his last name, CEO, he had such a outgoing personality that he was more than just your normal CEO.
Richard Branson.
Richard Branson's another great version of it. So I think in her article, she talks about it. Maybe it was Jessica Matthews. Damn it. I'm going to put this in our show notes and a link to the article.
Okay.
I feel bad about that. But I think it's going to be interesting to see how CEOs evolve in this space. You know what I mean? Because of the platform. I mean, we're hosting a podcast and we're a mining company talking about all different things in crypto because we want to share our learning process and experiences with others, hoping that it's at a value.
We want to put a face to our names because a lot of these crypto companies are shadowy figures.
This is true.
So, I mean, that's why we talked about like doing this to discuss what we've learned from these things and then also put a face to the company.
And so in that way, faces, Ethereum,
yeah.
I do believe that Vitalik Buterin being as vocal and engaged as he is.
Yeah.
I mean, he definitely, the persona that is portrayed by the media, he comes across as an engineer, a developer. He looks the role, the way everything, you know, the stereotype of that type of persona has been really amplified by his whole look and feel.
Yeah.
But it also helps in a lot of ways because you now have a face.
Yeah.
But it also, I mean, he's young and he needs to have thicker skin. I don't know that he doesn't, but he's definitely developing calluses all over him because he's getting beat up.
You think so?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes. Well, I mean,
he's Jack Dorsey-ing it.
Jack Dorsey's a different story.
Oh, okay.
It would be interesting.
Because it seemed like he like turned and was like mean all of a sudden and then just became like this I don't care figure. You know?
He's adopted a lot of different things. But yeah. I mean, especially somebody like Vitalik or even Jack Dorsey, when you mention them, they had such a prominence in the space because of their business success.
Yeah.
So early on that you got to see them go through their own human growth in the face of media while controlling, you know, some very powerful assets.
Yeah.
Twitter, powerful asset. Square, very powerful. And now they're Block, right? There's so many things happening with that. But bringing it back to Ethereum.
Yeah.
Ethereum, it's incredible what they've achieved in the time that they've achieved it.
Yeah.
A lot of that is on the backs of so many people adopting how they can build on top of Ethereum's blockchain.
Mm-hmm.
And it should be noted that Ether is the cryptocurrency of Ethereum.
Yeah.
So they are separate.
Ethereum's the network.
Yeah. So yeah. Just to help educate those who may or may not know, there is a difference between the two.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about the tokenomics of Ethereum.
Okay.
Yeah. So what are we looking at here?
So, I mean, currently talking about it, it is the number two ranked coin by market cap with a market cap of $337 billion, fully diluted $336. I don't know why that's less, but in a 24-hour period, there was $13 billion traded. And it currently has a circulating supply of 120,592,249.44 Ethereum. So basically, it keeps. There's going to be more every time another block is hit, and there continued to be mining, or there's continued proof of work of this. So, I mean, I really like that number.
Why do you like that number? What about that number do you like?
It's a low number, you know, which is actually why the price of each Ethereum is so high. So it's currently at $2,794 US dollars per Ethereum or Ether.
And this is on, you're getting the data from CoinMarketCap right now?
CoinMarketCap.com.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like theirs, and their charts are really good, up to date, 1 year, year to date, all time. So, I mean, you had this really big jump. We can't expect it to always go up, but it is down currently. One thing I don't like about Ethereum is that they don't have a max supply. So, I mean, you look at something from a inflationary asset versus a deflationary asset.
Yep.
And obviously, if you can't say like there's X amount supply, like, and that's all there's ever gonna be, then, you know, people are kind of cautious of that. People like me, you know,
yeah,
I don't know, because like I think it's too big for them to just be like, okay, we're adding another 120 million, but it's also not out of the realm of possibility. So when you say it's something like we're trying to get away from the Ponzi scheme stigma,
yeah,
you have coins like Bitcoin, which have a max supply, and
right,
like once they hit that, like, okay, you know, like there's no others going to be available.
Yeah.
Whereas Ethereum, it's not that way.
Yeah.
So the council could come out and be like, hey, or the DAO could come out and be like, well, we're going to vote on adding more coins.
Interesting. Like,
okay.
See, and so that, yeah, brings it back to how decentralized is it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's there's almost, I don't want to use the word layers because it gets stuck up in the understanding of a layer one, layer two, and layer three,
mm-hmm,
and subsequent layers as it relates to
blockchains. Should we do it like bean dip? Layers?
I'm just kidding. Or a trifold?
Yeah.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. That's funny.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's almost, there's no standard of what constitutes full decentralization in some of the tech that's released right now.
Yeah.
Because it says, oh, it's decentralized, but it's governed by a DAO.
Yeah.
Okay. Just because it says decentralized autonomous organization, does that mean it's being ran as a decentralized autonomous organization? Because if you have proof of stake per se, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the argument for proof of stake is that it could be controlled by the majority holder.
People.
Yeah, if they own the majority.
Yeah.
You know, proof of work is a little bit different.
Well, same idea though. If somebody controls 51% of the total mining,
yeah, then the same issue is going to happen.
Yeah.
And obviously, miners, they try to fight against that.
Yeah. I mean, because if you have more than 51%, you could basically be like, oh, yeah, throw in a couple extra for me, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there'd be no way to prove it because you're the majority miner. Which, I mean, you know, you run into this a few times with, like, some of the smaller coins because, like, two miners will be like, hey, mine with our platform. And then a lot of people switch over because they've got a really clean interface, really easy to use. They take low fees.
Yeah.
And so it's like, well, why not? But if they get over 51% of any given coin, they...
Well, let's talk about that a little bit.
Control the market. So.
What is it about Ethereum mining that's been so rewarding?
Why?
Yeah. What has made Ethereum mining rewarding?
I think it has a high price. You're still at a point where they give you large blocks.
Mm-hmm.
And
but it, I mean, we've had it fluctuate in difficulty.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And right now, with the move to 2.0... You know, there's a lot of chatter, and that's why GPU prices are coming down.
Yeah.
It's because more people are not going to be able to mine Ethereum anymore.
Yeah.
There is a little bit of an unknown of what's going to happen to Ethereum after Ethereum 2.0 comes out.
Yeah.
Because you could still feasibly mine Ethereum Classic.
Yeah, you can.
Is it profitable?
Well.
We could take a look.
Yeah. Let's see.
Okay.
I mean, right now it says, like, on the list... Conflux, Cero, Xano, Raven, Ergo, Flux is at about 60 cents. Beam, Ethereum Classic is at 46 cents per day in profit.
And you're looking at this on?
Which is three times less than Ethereum.
Where are you looking at this at?
What2Mine.
What2Mine.com. Yeah. Okay. So having said that, with... all things proof of work and Ethereum. I mean,
you're gonna get winners and losers in this, and it's gonna change by the day
because of the value of
the coin,
cryptocurrency, the coin itself. Yeah.
A lot of people, like, once it starts going down in profit, if they're not in a place where they're getting free
Electricity,
and then they'll just ACs, stop.
They just stop because they can't cover the overhead cost.
Exactly, because it's not profitable at that point.
Because they need to have their per unit metrics work in real time as opposed to the future.
And then so when that happens, then other people jump on that network and are able to mine it with less difficulty, which is awesome.
Because
and then
they'll rise up,
and then people look at that and they go, okay, and then
we're going back in.
Yeah,
that is one of the things that I'm become more aware of and share with others, that anybody we talk about with mining, is that time needs to work its magic.
Yeah.
And that it's almost forced dollar cost averaging.
Yeah.
Because
I like that way of looking at it. I told you that before.
Yeah. So you might have, but if the listener hasn't heard any of our previous podcasts, they may not know that. So this is new news to them.
New news to them.
Or a new
forced dollar cost averaging. What is that?
Essentially, I know a lot of people, instead of putting $1,000 in 1 month, would rather, you know, put $100 in every month just so that they can work with the ebb and flow of the market, because sometimes it's up, sometimes it's down. I did hear you hit the vape pen.
No, you didn't.
Oh, I didn't. It's a sound effect in the background to emphasize what I was saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. But in going back to more Ethereum, it's really become the poster child, along with Bitcoin, of Web3.
Yeah.
And again, I think it's unfair that a lot of the deployments thus far have been pegged to an inefficiency in Ethereum's blockchain, as opposed to the humans that just built whatever layer 2 or subsequent layer on top of Ethereum's blockchain.
Yeah.
There needs to be more accountability with it, as opposed to being, you know, just pointing the finger and saying, oh, it's because of Ethereum.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know, man. It's interesting. Ethereum right now, we had this discussion because we're mining Ethereum, that we convert to XNO because there's, you know, no gas fees, transactionless fees, that its all-time high was $37.09 at its current price today, which is just under $2. If Ethereum was to go back to its all-time high, forget, like 4,600, something in that realm.
Yeah.
If we were to hang on to our Nano and it went back to its all-time high, for Ethereum to achieve that same profit margin, Ethereum would have to go to like $55,000.
17 times X.
So just substantially more than what it's ever been.
Yeah.
So, again, we're not financial advisors, you know, wealth managers. We're not giving investment advice, but it makes you wonder.
Yeah.
Like, what do you hang on to? You know what I mean?
Token-wise?
Token-wise. Yeah. Cryptocurrency. You know, what do you hang on to?
Yeah.
At certain times? Because if Ethereum is it feasible to think that there could be an Ethereum 3.0? Because they've already had a switch from Ethereum Classic to Ethereum.
Yeah.
Valid reasons why.
So wouldn't this be 3.0?
I know, right? but
yeah,
you see where I'm going with this? Is that
yeah.
What's stopping it from going to Ethereum 3.0?
And nobody's ever told me, like, hey, all like, and I don't know where to find this information out. Like, if you're Ethereum, like, do you keep your Ethereum and then you're just awarded how many ever Ethereum you have to Ethereum 2.0, and you can still mine Ethereum, but it obviously, like, it's going to be ditched or something. I don't know,
but what we will do is do some due diligence and put some links in our show notes to that very key point.
Yeah.
Because I'm curious as well.
Because, like, I mean, with Ethereum Classic, like, it was just kind of like, oh, here's Ethereum Classic still, blah, blah. We're going to hard fork to Ethereum. Now what? Like, is the same thing going to happen with Ethereum 2.0, except you can only stake it instead? So it'll just be interesting. I don't know. Or will it all become Ethereum 2.0? Then you'll have to wrap or rewrite your contracts or...
It's a good question.
I don't know. It's a huge network. There's tons of stuff built on top of it. Like, I'm excited and, like, curious to see.
Yeah.
Like, are they going to blow this whole thing up?
I don't know. I don't think anything we're saying is meant to be a jab.
No, it's not.
It's just asking questions, right? Yeah. And I know we're just two people talking about this. We have our place in this world.
Yeah.
Because we work within mining and... You know, we spend so much time in the crypto and Web3 space simply because of it's becoming our bread and butter.
Mm-hmm.
So it's having these conversations and sharing them with, you know, our listeners and hopefully others is that we create dialogue. You know, please post questions, messages, thoughts in our comments or DM us or message us, because Ethereum is moving the needle in such a way that it's helped Bitcoin, I believe.
Yeah.
Bitcoin, I don't believe, could have got to where they are currently without Ethereum.
Yeah.
You know, it is a byproduct. The success of Ethereum and some of the heartache of Ethereum has helped Bitcoin. Because Ethereum...
And drugs. Yeah.
You're talking about dark web shit.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you know, if you really want to have that conversation, there's always going
to
be...
I mean, if we do a Bitcoin deep dive, it has to be part of the conversation.
Yeah. Okay, so let's touch on that a little bit. Dark web and Ethereum.
Oh, and Ethereum?
Everybody, regardless, no matter...
I think Ethereum's public keys are too public. I don't think, like, you could get away with that.
So you wouldn't trade an NFT for some cocaine?
No.
On the dark web?
No, probably not.
You don't think so?
I don't know. That's an interesting thought. But I think it's too public to, like, actually fully get away with it. I don't know. I think Bitcoin back in the day was private enough that you could essentially get away with it. And then you've got, like, private tokens like Monero and Zcash, but Zcash obviously has a privacy element, but they had to take it off to continue running in the US or something. So you have the options, but go ahead.
So in doing a little bit of due diligence on this, right? Yeah. Investopedia says cryptocurrencies are popular on the dark web. Duh. In August of 2017, it was reported that Bitcoin, Monero, and Ethereum were the preferred coins to conduct dark web transactions.
Oh, yeah.
The lead on this is Litecoin gains ground on Bitcoin and dark web. Litecoin would.
Yeah, I mean, it's super fast.
Yeah. So
you can be like, oh, okay, cool. Yeah.
So Ethereum is, it says, at least according to this, again, do your own due diligence, but Ethereum is a preferred method on the dark web. But so is gold. So is cash.
On the dark web?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You know. Yeah. Anything of value.
Yeah.
Can be used to transact services, goods.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I was going to say how you could do it, but then I realized that that's probably not a good idea. So.
Oh, yeah. That's not what we're trying to achieve. I guess you
could get a... Okay, never mind. I'm going to shut that thought down.
It's definitely not what we're trying to achieve with this podcast of showing you, hey, this is how you navigate the dark web.
Yeah.
You know, this is how you launder money. You know, let me show you. This is how you get your cocaine free and clear.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No.
I mean, there's so many other...
Yeah.
Dark web things that we just don't need to touch on.
No, for sure.
But all things crypto, it should be recognized. Yes, it can be used in those ways.
Yeah.
Silk Road, I mean, it's notorious.
Yeah.
I mean, keep mentioning her, Katie Hahn. She was part of the DOJ that was part of the Silk Road investigation. So,
oh, was she? Yeah. Okay.
I'll put that in the show note links as well. But yeah, so Ethereum, like all cryptocurrencies, also gets lumped into... Oh, but it's used for this, you know, and it's like, wait a minute. So many other things as well, too.
Yeah.
There's been a number of discussions online, on podcasts, about the environmental nature of proof of work versus proof of stake, especially as it relates to Ethereum, since so many people are mining Ethereum.
Yeah.
Because it is second to Bitcoin as far as mining. Because Ethereum, you can still use GPUs, graphics card processing units, as opposed to ASIC machines, which is what Bitcoin uses to mine.
Yeah. Those things take a lot more power, but
they do.
But I think you see a lot of people in the space, and we touched on it just a minute ago. But it's like, if the cost to mine is more expensive than what you're actually mining, like, do you do it? Probably not. So,
unless you're just there for the long haul.
Yeah, true. But I mean. Like, you're gonna pay more money than it's actually worth.
Than you would if you just purchased it.
Yeah. So, like, why would you go through those steps?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I see in the space a lot of people are switching to renewables for this specifically, because then you get more out of it.
Yeah, because then your cost to operate,
your
per unit metrics... changes substantially.
Yeah,
that's why we're looking at other places to house our mining farms. Is simply put, if renewable energy sources are more abundant and the cost of electricity is substantially lower, and we don't have to have an HVAC system because it's just predominantly colder.
Yeah.
Hello. If our overhead goes down, our profit's going to go up.
Yeah.
You know, in real estate, that's,
we can pass that on to our partners. Like, that's perfect.
Yeah, because in real estate, they always say you make your money on your purchase.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you make your money. And I believe that to be true.
Yeah.
A number of hospitality people I know that work in even the restaurant industry talk about your lease is everything.
Yeah.
Whatever you're going to pay for, what your brick and mortar footprint is, what dictates the one of the biggest components of your ROI.
Yeah.
So our fixed costs, if we're able to bring down the cost of the most variable of our hard costs, being electricity.
Yep.
Yeah. Why wouldn't we?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So that makes sense what you're saying with that.
Like, there's that perfect one where, like, this kid bought like 10 or 20 Bitcoin, and then when it reached like 50K, sold them all and just bought a farm with a...
Oh, I think I saw that article.
Yeah.
I'm gonna see if I can put that in the show notes
and
as well.
And then just like,
it's a cool story.
Yeah, and then just running off of pure profit.
Yeah.
And just mining more.
I love that.
There you go.
I love that.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if we said it earlier in the podcast, but I feel like crypto is such a sexy industry, right? For investing, NFTs are super sexy because people become millionaires, multimillionaires overnight, it seems like.
Yeah.
But, and people with Bitcoin right now, you know, 20-year-olds who are multimillionaires because of Bitcoin. But mining is the least sexy version of how to make money in the crypto space, even though I feel like it's also I wouldn't say it's completely risk-free.
No.
But it's definitely lower in risk.
Absolutely.
In my opinion.
Yeah.
So.
You're just about those small gains, just boom, boom, boom.
Just ongoing. Yeah. I want time to work its magic.
Yep.
You know, and with all these things. But proof of stake will be interesting.
Yeah.
We'd still love to, you know, create our own nodes and stake because for all the things that, you know, we point out that might be an issue with Ethereum, we still, we want to see it succeed.
Yeah.
I want to see it succeed.
Absolutely.
So.
I want to see 2.0 happen. Like, I want gas fees to basically be almost eliminated.
Yeah. That's
like
the one thing I like
about Nano. Though, I think, yeah. We talked about this earlier with not on the podcast, but like we were talking about Nano.
Okay.
And you're like, well, is it going to have its day again? And I was like, I honestly don't know. I think one of the things that hurts it is that it's basically free to use, free to send. So there's no incentive for people to build on it or use it other than it's free.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with Ethereum, you have all these people that you pay for down the line. You know, when you trade it on an exchange, you get hit with a exchange fee.
Yeah.
When you move it somewhere, you get hit with gas fees. When you buy an NFT with it, you get hit with gas fees. Like, so there's all these people down the line that get paid. They're like, here, let me take my cut.
So basically, you can't put the sofa in the front of your house with the sign free. You have to at least put $5.
Exactly.
Otherwise, it never gets picked up.
But you brought up an interesting point where, like, now, I mean, you saw that with the banks in, like, the 80s and 90s. Like, $10-$15 or have a checking account, blah, blah, blah. And then now it's free.
It
you know what I mean?
Be.
It's like free checking, free blah, blah, blah. So it's like the lower cost to like bring customers in worked. And then now it's like on that system. So that's what I believe with X and O. Like you hit the nail on the head with that. It's like at some point, yes, they will have their day again because they're really efficient networks that run on proof of stake. They, you know, I think Ethereum could get there someday? Possibly. But I think too many people are used to getting paid along the way that it might take time or might not ever happen.
I mean, once you have a critical mass adoption of something, it changes the way people use it because now you have these micro insights, right? So Nielsen for TV ratings. I've never been the biggest fan of their TV ratings because they take a subset of the population and they create some sort of formula that's supposed to tell you what America's watching.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. Their subset of information isn't even 1% of the population. How the fuck are you going to tell me what the country's watching when you don't even have 1% as, you know, your point of reference?
Yeah, as your point of reference.
And let's take just suburbs of cities like Chicago.
Yeah.
There's so many different humans in Chicago that watch so many different things.
Yeah.
That... So going, how does this relate to cryptocurrency? I'm of the belief that because there's so many different ways to use different cryptocurrency tokens and coins and what's being built on it, that there's going to be unique use cases for each. That's why I think that Bitcoin, while it might be the winner, so to speak, it's not going to be the only one simply because of the utility value of the technology behind crypto.
Yeah.
So banks... banks don't need to be involved with our money.
No.
They never have. Everything that's been created thus far is human created. It wasn't, so, and this goes in the weeds a little bit, and I'll leave it as is. We don't need to go too far into it. Inflation is as a result of the way our economic system's been structured. It wasn't like that was just already there. It wasn't written on walls in caveman days, let's say.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, this is the way that you factor in inflation. These are human-created things.
Yeah.
So if it's human-created, can't we create something else, you know?
To fix it.
It's that argument that the Constitution was written a certain way, you know? But, again, nobody has the crystal ball.
Yeah.
So you try to write something that can be as scalable as possible.
Yeah.
But what was scalable in the 80s isn't necessarily scalable today even. And that's just a few decades ago.
Yeah.
Right? So when you think about the evolution of technology, how can the way we think, even as far back as a decade, which isn't that far, how can you see far enough to where it becomes applicable towards the future?
Yeah.
think about metaverse marriages. Are we going to use real-world IRL marriages as case studies in how metaverse marriages can work?
Yeah.
You could, but you have a whole new subset of problems in the metaverse that you never had in the real world.
You could be a dog man, right?
But I guess this is why when you're driving, it doesn't matter where in the United States, right?
Yeah.
You'll see, you know, poor areas and you'll see rich areas. And you just drive by and you're like, what the fuck do they do for a living? You're like, so many people have money in this country. A lot of people don't.
Yeah.
But you see this wealth and, you know, a lack of wealth.
Yeah.
But clearly there's all these different jobs.
Yeah.
So I guess you'd say human error creates opportunity.
Yeah.
And so in this way, cryptocurrency human error will create opportunity, even though they're supposed to be built on these decentralized networks. Because we have other centralized institutions, such as banks, involved, there's going to be more error, therefore more opportunity. And I think Ethereum has helped lead that charge in a substantial way. I mean, is it going to be the AOL of the situation? To where, I mean, AOL brought in a substantial amount of internet use.
Yeah.
I mean, look at You've Got Mail. I don't know if you ever watched those rom-coms.
But are you talking with Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah, but that was an AOL time. That was a time capsule movie. If you watch it now, you're like, what the fuck?
Didn't she own a bookstore in Chicago?
Shop Around the Corner, New York.
New York.
Yeah, and, yeah. I've never seen it. Can you tell?
And then a big box store was moving in.
Fox Books, yeah.
Fox Books.
Yeah, yeah.
That was right about the time that Amazon started to sell books online.
It's so funny. Yeah, life, art, a little bit all dated, those things.
But, I mean, exactly what you're saying. So she got closed down by Fox Books. They got closed down by Amazon. So, you know.
Yeah. But
hopefully they're still in love, though.
Here's what's funny. And I love Nora Ephron movies.
Yeah.
That side of me does. I'm not going to lie. You know, I do. I find them wildly entertaining.
Oh, yeah.
But here's a problem with that movie. And I know this is such a tangent on crypto.
Okay.
They were cheating on their others through the internet. So they were the earliest version of Ashley Madison. Ooh. But it's done in such a playful, fun way. It's almost like Sleepless in Seattle. She's stalking Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
What about that is cute? She's stalking him. But it's such an endearing way that you frame the story. It's like how you tell the story, right?
Yeah.
So this kind of does. Now I can wrangle it back in to crypto. Here's how I'm going to do it. Ethereum. If they continue on the trajectory of moving up, making improvements, let's say, and everything works out, you know, they're able to face the challenges that come out in front of them, whether or not 2.0 is the last bastion that they iterate so that they can solve the problems that they're having.
Yeah.
If they do solve enough problems, they will win in their own way. And then they can write the history books.
Yeah.
But if they lose and somebody else is able to take over their market dominance currently, they will write the history books. So these will be two different histories that could be told.
Yeah.
Two different case studies that can be reviewed.
Yeah. Well, I don't think there's another one that can, but yeah, we'll see.
You don't think Solana can?
Mm-hmm.
No?
No.
Cosmos? I think Cosmos is a sleeper, man.
Is it?
Dude, I
haven't looked into it, so we'll have to.
People, I keep seeing people building more on top of it.
Yeah.
Developers I talk with, entrepreneurs I see wanting to launch things. I was talking with one who wants to do something in the academic space.
Yeah.
He wants to build on top of the Cosmos network. Yeah. And it's like, you know, so I've been doing more due diligence on it. And, you know, I've been becoming a fan of it. You know, here's another interesting point. Ethereum. An ape.
Yeah.
Do you think ape coins could be worth more than Ethereum?
No.
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 This will be interesting. We'll bet a coffee on this. We'll see each other in 10 years.
Okay.
But I'm just curious about it. Not because I disagree with you.
Yeah.
It's just fun to bet in that way. Simple coffee is always nice. But I'm curious because Ape has gained such a tremendous amount of value. And the market is down right now and Ape's going up. What is the rationale behind that? You know? And again, Ape.
Hype.
Is, I don't know. As a result of Ethereum.
Yeah.
They live, breathe, and exist because of Ethereum.
Yeah. I think just market cap wise, I don't think I'm looking at it. There's 1 billion max supply, total supply. So maybe, like we were talking about earlier with possibility of them putting out more Ethereum. So, yeah. Do I think do you want to do the coffee on market cap or if one coin will be worth more than the other?
One coin worth more than the other.
Oh, then I'll just win simple lame for is, sure.
Yeah.
But if we did market cap, then that would make more sense for you.
Yeah. Well, again, I'm not trying to disagree with you.
Yeah, I'm talking 120 million coins versus 1 billion coins.
Yeah. The scarcity of it. I get it.
So, No. You're still going to say the ape coin is going to be worth more.
No. I'm not saying it's going to be worth more. I'm just curious if it could be.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
No, I don't think so.
I don't think it will be either. But, you know, we can't bet on the same thing because otherwise nobody's buying somebody a coffee.
Yeah.
So for shits and giggles, I'm just going to say that it will be.
Let's put market cap then.
All right. That's two coffees. We'll do one for one for the other.
Oh, okay. So offsetting coffees.
All right.
All right.
I think we've talked about Ethereum quite a bit.
And some other tangents as well.
Yeah. But Ethereum does that.
Yeah, for sure.
Because
it's so big. It's robust. We could have just broken it down into like, we're just talking about what Ethereum is and what it blah, blah, blah. And then we could have done a whole show on DAOs. We could have done a whole show on NFTs.
We could do a whole show on DeFi. We've done shows
on NFTs before. So.
Yeah. And we could talk just about DeFi in one whole episode. But see, then.
Oh, we didn't even talk about DeFi. Yeah.
So in that way. I mean, DeFi is something I feel like we can talk about on its own because there are a lot of iterations with different blockchains about DeFi.
Yeah.
To exclude other blockchains and just talk about Ethereum DeFi, I think it would be a better podcast to just talk about DeFi.
For sure.
But that's just my opinion. If you think that's wrong, then
let's do
somebody DM us.
Yeah.
Blue Sky Music NFT. And I'm writing a paper on this to be published on mirror.xyz. If you have an NFT of a song, say, let's say Steel Dre, right? Beautiful song. Iconic song. If you created a DAO, it doesn't even have to be a DAO. It can just be, you know, the people who own the rights to Steel Dre. And then, but it would be nice if it was a DAO because then maybe you could see a proper execution of one.
Yeah.
But if you have the organization who owns Steel Dre, you know, property, creative license, and then you post on, say, hey, anybody, everybody, how can you layer on top of this, whether it's for a remix, sampling, maybe you just rearrange it in such a way using just a sitar.
Mm-hmm.
Send us, upload your version utilizing Steel Dre. Let the community vote on which one should be created as NFTs and released through the Steel Dre mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
So Steel Dre, for the next 40, 50, 100 years, might have as many as 1,000 different versions with anything from folk music to, you know, more rap or hip-hop. Maybe there's a rock version. But now, the intellectual property of Steel Dre, the creative license of it, controls all those iterations. But it opens up that creativity, that iconic intro, to be interpreted by other musicians and artists in such a way that they can also make money. But now it pays the people who originally created it.
Yeah.
But the footprint of that could be massive.
Yeah.
And it could be done in a way to where it removes what I call profit choppers.
Yeah.
People with their hands in the pie that contribute zero value, maybe even during the inception of the song.
Yeah.
You don't need that many profit choppers anymore in creative products, in my opinion. It needs to be straight between those who created the product, distributed the product, market the product.
Yeah.
But the communities we live in now digitally, especially with the metaverse possibly taking on a whole new foothold, there's no reason, because we've seen it with entertainment, that distribution channels have been shrunk. Like, to distribute something is nothing. I mean, YouTube. Go to YouTube.
Yeah, we distribute this podcast.
Yeah. You know, everything can grow on its own.
Yeah.
It doesn't need, you don't need to pitch something anymore to a network to have something actually have legs. If you, people like what you're doing enough.
Yeah.
You get enough views. There you go, baby. But in this blue sky, if it was built on Ethereum, aside from the gas fees, you could have NFTs of every single version of Steel Dre created. And it creates a whole new ecosystem of how people can make money with music.
Mm-hmm.
But it's off of a song.
Yeah.
That maybe 50 years from now, you're like, oh, it's a 50-year-old song. Or Marvin Gaye, you know, his song, his catalog's amazing for sampling. Mm-hmm. I mean, just talk to Robin Thicke in Blurred Lines when you talk about, you know, sampling things.
Yeah.
So, but my point being is this, that NFT infrastructure with a DAO, I think could work. And that's blue sky with how Ethereum could be used.
Yeah. You want cloudy sky? I'm just kidding.
All right. So that's it for my blue sky.
Awesome.
To wrap up this show, you can visit us at cryptopodcast.xyz for all of our show notes. It's in the description. It's also within whatever platform you're listening on. We have it in there, a link to it. That's where we break down everything and link to all our source material and anything that we do our due diligence on, just to make sure that, you know, we're trying to provide you information that's true and correct. We have thick skin, so if you have feedback for us, please send it to us.
Yeah.
Brandon, Neil, you're looking good.
Thank you.
So our original music was provided by the Celebrators Band. Good band. They just released an EP or some singles. So it's pretty cool. But again, thank you for sharing your time with us. Hopefully we provided value to you. If we did, please, you know, subscribe on our YouTube channel, subscribe on whatever platform. If you click the little bell on those things, they let you notification wise. And if you do see value, share it with others. You know, who doesn't like to see value? I am your host, Neil Alonzo, and with my co-host, Brandon Heath. This podcast studio has been provided to us by www.aduwestcoast.com.
West Coast.
ADU West Coast is in Seal Beach. They turn underutilized garage space and backyards into rental housing units. Again, you can visit their website at www.aduwestcoast.com. I still don't understand why I say www.
Yeah.
But again, thank you for joining us. We appreciate you. And yeah.
Hashtag why.
What?
Why do you say www? Oh. Yeah, anyway. All right. Bye, guys.
Thank you.